Good morning, and thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I appreciate you for being here very, very much. I got to tell you, I think I just witnessed one of the sweetest things ever happen. And this is my fault, by the way. It's my fault. But I am recording this moments after John Carbone has left my building. John was very sweet. He came here to do the interview here at Craft Cannery. He brought a sheet pizza for our employees. He brought wings. He brought his own sweet and sour sauce that is his invention. And it was just a really beautiful gesture of him to do that for my people, because he knew he was coming to a place of business to record this podcast. We do the interview, which you're about to hear. And not John's fault, but in the interview, something happens. Actually, something doesn't happen, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Never in this episode do we talk about John's wife. And we do talk about family a lot in this, of course, you'll hear, but we don't specifically talk about his wife. And that's because, you know, John, look, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He's not, and I pride myself on that, by the way. Getting entrepreneurs with the business sense and the wisdom that John has. By the way, two Johns in a row, right? Last week, John Erlob. This week, John Carbone. But with the wisdom that John Carbone has that he's going to impart on you in the next hour, I pride myself on getting those things out of entrepreneurs. That said, sometimes I'm interviewing people who are not used to being interviewed. And John is a guy who's not used to being interviewed. John Carbone has not done a lot of interviews, especially not quote unquote live. Now, of course, we're not live. But what I mean is he's on a microphone and he has essentially unlimited space to talk. And that's, you know, different, because when you're being interviewed for the newspaper, you're giving quotes. When you're on TV, you're being interviewed for 3 minutes. They pull out 10 seconds, right? I always loved radio because we'll talk to you completely uncut, unedited for minutes. In the case of a podcast, for an hour. And people tend to get comfortable and good stuff starts coming out. But in this episode, John never gets the opportunity to thank his wife and to give her a shout out. And so when I say the sweetest thing ever just happened, John left, I came back upstairs, time to record the intro, and I get that ding, ding. My phone is there's texting on my phone. And John says, "Paul, is there any way to get a mention about how much my wife has contributed to our success? She, Lori, is one of the main reasons that we succeeded. I met her in August of 1983 before going into the pizza business. She is the best thing in my life, and the best thing in my life was not only her, but also having a family with her. And my wife now, Ryan, introduced me to a saying recently that I thought was a wonderful saying, and maybe you've heard this before, but I hadn't, and now I've used it. Ryan used it on me. I used it last weekend at the Big Brothers Big Sisters Gala, talking about Malik Evans, who was our keynote speaker, and his wife. And I'm going to use it right now about Lori Carbone, John's wife. My wife, Lori. They hold the ladder so that we can climb. I never really know how to say it, and it doesn't come out enough. But there is a 0% chance that I or John would ever be able to do what we have done with our businesses without the solid foundation of what our wives have created for us at home. I know in my case that my wife has stepped up to do just about everything, including even help at Craft Cannery. She does some marketing for us on the side. My wife and her mother own Redbird Market. My wife has a PR business on the side. My wife helps here with Craft Cannery a little here and there. And she raises our kids. And that's not to say I'm absent. I'm not an absent father, but I am gone for 12 hours a day easily. At least 12 hours a day, I'm gone. And she does it. And no, she doesn't do it with a smile always, and she shouldn't, because there are times when it's 3 nights in a row that I'm not going to be home. And she'll give me shit for that. And I deserve shit for that. And I'd imagine John and a lot of other entrepreneurs out there know exactly what I'm talking about. One big transition for me, I would say, in the last year and a half now has really been to You know, I'm not doing the festivals on weekends. I'm not doing as many demos. I'm really, really trying not to come to work on weekends. And I think I did work a weekend just a couple weeks ago, but I want to say all of 2025, I maybe spent a total of 2 weekend days here at work. So far, 2026, I've got 1. That's really an improvement. I mean, years ago, that was every other weekend, both days. Now it's just a couple of days for the whole year. And I am so happy, and I think and I hope that John is in the same boat as I am, to have turned a corner and to be able to be home on weekends, to see my kids almost every day. It's a beautiful thing. And the saying is, we climb because at home, she is holding the ladder for us. Enjoy, John Carbone. And we're rolling, sir. I'm so excited, and I have these awkward moments right before the podcast where I feel like I'm not being very talkative because I'm so excited to talk to you, but I don't want to blow it until the mics are on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I am so happy that you're here, and you did this wonderful, kind thing. You brought pizza for the workers here at Craft Cannery and wings and your sweet sauce, too.
Oh, I'm glad to bring it for you.
It was
hope
so
you,
nice.
Hope they all enjoy it.
Oh, definitely. So here's the thing. About a month ago, I go on Facebook and I put a picture of a pizza from my hometown, which is Conneaut, Ohio. I put a picture of a pizza on Facebook and I say, does anybody know in Rochester, where can I get a pizza that looks like this? And there were a bunch of comments. There were like 70 comments. It was like a lot of comments. And a good handful of people said, that's Carbone's. You need to go to Carbone's. And my issue is, I'm not originally from here, although no excuses. I've been here 17 years at this point. I'm not originally from Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I moved, I lived in the city and I lived on the east side. And I married an east side girl. And let's be honest about the east siders. They can be a little snooty, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and we're not on the east side, so.
Exactly.
Hard to find us.
Sometimes. I just like, I don't know how I missed it, but I just missed it. Mm-hmm. And then everyone said Carbone's. Yeah. And a special shout out, one girl in particular, Danielle Ramo, who used to own the Brainery. By the way, there were some like Rochester celebrities in my comments who were like, Carbone's, Carbone's. And Danielle was one of those people. And I went, Danielle is a foodie. Yeah. And if Danielle says Carbone's, I'm going to Carbone's. So I had to be at a funeral in Greece. I went to this funeral and I looked up real quick, where's Carbone's? And you guys were Dewey Ave was like right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, okay, this is my day. I go to Carbone's. I order pepperoni pizza. Well done. Because this pizza that I had put a picture on from Ohio was like charred a little bit. It was a little bit well done. So I asked for it well done. It was the most perfect pizza that I have ever had in my life, right? Oh, and by the way, I lived in Italy for a year. I'm counting all of it. I'm counting all of it. I was born and raised in America, so like I'm more used to American pizza than I am Italian pizza.
Right.
It was perfect, John.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I just, I'm in awe. I am in awe. So then I said, well, let me, actually, your social media person, by the way, who is your social
it's,
media?
It's her name's Sarah.
Sarah.
She goes, Sarah Does Social.
Yeah, Sarah Does Social. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, yeah. She reached out to me. She saw the post, and she reached out and was like, hey, can I share this? And I was like, "That yes, absolutely. By the way, can I meet the owners? I would love to interview them for this podcast." So that's how it came to be. So it all came to be, bro.
Well, I'm glad you asked. Nice to meet you also.
So this podcast is about entrepreneurship. You're obviously an entrepreneur. You're the founder of Carbone's. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear the story, but it's really more a story about you than Carbone's. So where are you born and raised?
I'm born in Buffalo.
Okay.
Moved here, I think, 1970 when my father was transferred.
Okay. And what did your dad do?
My dad was an insurance guy for MetLife.
Got it.
So he's, you know, lifelong insurance guy until he passed, yeah.
So you're in the sixth year kid at that point, or?
I am going into eighth grade at that time.
Oh, that's a tough time to move.
That was a tough time to move, you know, yeah. At my age, I guess. Not as hard for my brothers and sisters because they were younger.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but eighth grade is a very
eighth grade was a tough year, yeah.
It was a tough time.
You leave a lot of friends, childhood friends.
And then you go into a middle school at that point, and they've already got cliques, right? And so you're the new kid. And like, how did you find that experience?
Lonely, I guess, at first, because you know you don't know anybody. And I went to middle school for 1 year. I went to Athena Middle School, and then I ended up going to Arcadia High School. So most of the kids I met at the first year they're in middle school, they didn't even follow me to high school.
So you did it like 2 years in a row.
2 years in a row, basically.
You walked into school with all new kids. What was growing up in Buffalo? Granted, you're only there for 13 years or something. But growing up in Buffalo, what did you think of Rochester?
Everything was a lot farther away because we moved into Greece. I mean, in Buffalo, you had 20 kids living on the same streets, all close to each other. Yeah. Here, everything is more spread out. Harder to make friends, I think, in the beginning.
Yeah.
And not as many friends. You know.
Yeah. Your dad, what did your mom do, by the way?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom in Buffalo. She didn't really work when she lived in Buffalo, not to my knowledge or my recollection. But when we moved here to Greece, you know, she got a job here and there. But, you know, she had five kids to raise, too.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of work for her.
So she, your father moves here. He's Carbone. Is your mother also Italian?
My mother's not Italian. She's Polish and German.
I got the same situation in my house, by the way. We don't talk about it, you know?
Yeah, my dad 100% Italian. My mom half Polish, half German.
So did she make sauce on Sundays, or who made sauce?
She made sauce. Yeah. Actually, like you, growing up, my grandmother lived three houses away from us, my Italian grandmother, and we were there every Sunday with the whole family. If there was probably 30, 40 people on a Sunday having Sunday pasta,
And aren't those some of the best memories?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, everyone was still like, I think back to those Sundays at my grandpa's house. I wish I could go back there. I have a couple of videos from those days. I watch them every once. It's hard to watch without crying, though, because everyone's young and happy and healthy, and people that are not here anymore are still around.
Yeah, and there's a lot of memories there, especially lately. It's been going down memory lane because we're in the process of trying to sell my grandmother's house in Buffalo and going there and emptying it out. And, you know, you got the table we ate in the basement. You had a table like the Last Supper.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
A real old Italian stove, gas stove from like 1920 or.
In the basement by any chance?
In the basement. Yeah. Grandma cooked in the basement.
It's hard. I mean, all cultures have something like that. But the Sunday sauce thing is, in a way, it's hard to describe. In a way, it's not, because all cultures have something like it. But in a way, it's hard to describe because there's just a feeling of like it's a family reunion every Sunday.
Right, right.
And we do a good job, I think, the Italians who did the Sunday sauce tradition. We do a good job of staying in touch with cousins and aunts and uncles because you see each other once a week. Whereas, you know, when I married into my wife is not Italian, and also my mother is not Italian, and they didn't have as tight-knit of a family.
Right.
They also have this alarming thing, tell me if it was like this at the Carbone house when you were a kid, of walking into an Italian house on a Sunday and thinking we're all mad at each other because everyone's yelling. This was very real. People think it's a joke, but it's real.
There was a lot of talking going on. And when I was younger, I didn't even really understand what my grandmother was saying because she was speaking broken English.
Yeah, you know,
a lot of Italian, a lot of English. I had to really listen
to
understand what she was saying. Yeah.
I remember my mom saying that when she went to my grandpa's house and she was around this whole big Italian family, that it drove her crazy how everyone just talks over everyone
else.
She said you could be in the middle of a conversation and someone will just start another conversation right over top of you.
Yeah.
And she couldn't fathom that. She said, you know, growing up to her, it was like everyone sat quietly at dinner and maybe a little bit of one person at a time. No, not us.
No, not in that household. No, everyone was yelling and screaming. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so you go into high school, and like if I come to you maybe senior year in high school and I say to you, John, what are you going to be when you grow up? What do you think you would have said?
I think as a senior, I thought basically I was maybe going to go into the military at one time, into the Navy. My uncle was in the Navy. He was a lieutenant commander. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll do that. You know, I did college for a little bit. Mm-hmm. MCC wasn't for me. So I got out of college. And then around 19, I graduated in 76. Mm-hmm. So probably in the beginning of 77, my mom was working at a donut shop. House of Donuts, and was down on Dewey Avenue and Ladder Road area. And they said, hey, you want to bake donuts? We want to buy this business. So I'm like, I guess so. You know, I had no idea at the time. So we bought that shop in 77.
And did you yourself have any experience in the kitchen before that?
I had no experience in the donut business, no.
Okay. What about making other stuff? Just, you know, cooking at home, anything like
No.
And at this point in your life, pizza's not a thing yet? You're not making pizza at home, nothing like
that? In 77, pizza was not a thing for us, no. It was donuts. And then in 78, my uncle Dominic opened up a pizzeria in Buffalo. And he would say to my father all the time, why are you doing donuts? Come make pizza. There's more money. Mm-hmm. So it took us another 7 years to realize, okay, maybe we'll go out of the donut business and make pizza. And I mean, donut was good for us. We had a good business there.
So you said that you guys, that House of Donuts, you guys purchased that business?
My mom and father.
And up until that point, neither one of them were an entrepreneur though, right? He was an insurance salesman. Yeah. And so what do you think made them take that leap to say, let's become entrepreneurs, let's become business owners?
Oh, maybe to make things easier on the family and, mm-hmm. you know, make more money. You know, we weren't rich people back then, you know, so.
Easier, but it's harder because now it's around the clock, right?
It's around the clock, yeah. And I remember when we took that over, after 2 weeks, the weekend baker quit. We had So I worked 7 days a week for 2 years straight without a day off, and I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
So that was a hard time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your friends are getting ready to hang out and have fun, and 11 o'clock midnight comes, I got to leave and go to work. So.
Well, that's it, because it's interesting because you said maybe it was easier and also make more money. And there is upside eventually. But in my experience, early time in business is working around the clock and also not making money. And my biggest shell shock to owning a business was having to spend money at my business. I was like, wait a second. I thought I was supposed to make money here. I didn't realize this place was going to cost me money.
Yeah. I think my dad was just looking for a better life for everybody, for the family. So, yeah. I mean...
So everybody quits and goes, or he keeps
He keeps his job.
Smart, yeah. Yes.
So my mom, like I say, was working the counters there for a couple of years before that. I actually worked there a little bit in high school as a cleaning guy. Mm-hmm. I'd be the guy that went in after closing, and I'd mop the floors and things like that. And then I had left there, and I went to work for McCurdy's on a cleaning crew at McCurdy's and Ruby Gordon's on the docks and... And they said they want to buy it, and I went and trained for a couple weeks making donuts, and then after that, that was it.
And did you get the bug at that time when you were around it and you saw you guys actually owned this business? Did you start to get that entrepreneurial bug yourself a little bit? Or?
Oh, yeah. You want to work hard and make things go good, you know, mm-hmm. so it's... You go the extra mile, I guess.
Yeah. And you're working really hard.
I'm working
at
hard.
At that time, yeah. and you're enjoying it. Every bit of it is good.
I don't know if it's enjoyment, but I mean, it was new, but it was good. It give you satisfaction that, you know,
yeah.
And I think I was a really good baker. I think we had a good business. I thought my donuts were the best. So.
Yeah. Do you remember making those donuts? I mean, do you remember what you were doing that made them so that they were better than the competitors down the street? I mean, what was it that was so good?
Well, I just, maybe the recipe and the, mm-hmm. the people that were there before, they were, you know, quality bakers, and they taught me pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
We had a lot of business. I did all the schools. We delivered donuts to all the schools in the morning.
Nice.
Until now, I think schools can't even have donuts because it's not healthy.
It's so funny you say this. I don't want to get in trouble for this, but last week I went to Saratoga Springs for what's called the Farm to School Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically for manufacturers like us to be able to sell into the school system. It's to learn about that, to meet some of the buyers and things like that. And you're so right. They have very strict nutritional guidelines.
Right.
But then I'm also the father of a 7-year-old. And so I go to Council Rock primary school in Brighton where my kid goes to school, and I meet them for lunch once in a while. And yeah, they have the vegetable and the fruit and the, but then they've got a couple kiosks, cookies, ice cream, chocolate milk.
Right.
And so I asked it this thing last week. I said, I don't understand why there's so much talk about nutrition in schools, but when I go have lunch with my kid, he basically eats ice cream and chocolate milk.
Yeah.
And I guess there's an answer for it, is that the school districts can make decisions based on a la carte items. And mm-hmm. there is an answer to it. But the schools, what they're actually providing in terms of the free lunches that they're providing, have these nutritional values. Right. The extra stuff is the stuff you pay for. But anyway. But it's funny you say that, because, yeah, I don't think you see donuts in schools anymore.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And even pizza, I think it has to have a certain amount of cheese, or not too much cheese, or mm-hmm. not too much of this or that.
Yeah. Do you ever make donuts at home these days?
No.
That's in the past?
That's in the past.
Just skipping ahead a little in the story, in the years and years now that Carbone's has been open, have you ever dabbled in donuts at Carbone's, or was that never a thing?
I think about it all the time, but I don't want to work nights anymore.
Yeah, right.
So,
that's right. Yeah. All right. Okay, so the donut shop is going. You're kind of maybe getting the bug a little bit. You're mm-hmm. liking this. Mm-hmm. This is cool. Mm-hmm. What happens, and how many years does it last where you guys have the donut shop?
So we had the donut shop from 77 to 84.
Okay, and your uncle's making pizza in Buffalo.
My uncle's making pizza in Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. So he gets, my father keeps being reminded all the time, open a pizza shop. So in 84, we find a location here that was a former pizzeria. It actually was a Pontillo's at one time, the mm-hmm. building that we're in. And then Pudgy's Pizza, I think a daughter of Pudgy's Pizza.
Sure.
He opened it for her, for his daughter, and she didn't want to do it. So we ended up buying the equipment and stuff that was in there. Much of it we didn't even use or save. Mm-hmm. So with myself and my brother, we kind of remodeled the store a little bit, put up walls. And my brother was actually working at a cabinet maker, a wood place that made cabinets and dealt with Formica and stuff. So he built all the stuff in the store. And we went from there. So that was maybe in March or April of 84, we started remodeling that store. And the first day of operation, I still remember, was May 8th, and we sold 8 pizzas and brought in like $84.
And you called your uncle and said, "What the hell?"
Yeah. And I had gone to Buffalo to learn to make pizza before that.
That's what I was going to ask.
I spent a couple weeks in Buffalo at his location in South Park in Hamburg. And
what was his pizzeria called?
His is called Carbone Pizza and Subs.
Oh, is that still in existence?
It's still in existence.
Oh,
they now
wonderful.
They have two locations now.
Great.
And he actually got knowledge in his recipe and know-how from a friend of his, Tony Geraci. They call him Bunyan. And they had Abbott Pizza in Buffalo. So there's a lot of pizza guys in Buffalo. They're all friends and they all hang out.
There's kind of a lineage. He learns from Abbott's. Is he, the pizza he's making at Carbone's in 1984, back then, is it just like the Abbott's pizza, or did he go in a different direction?
To my knowledge, it was the same recipe. And actually, in order for us to open our store, he asked permission to give us the recipe.
Oh.
Yeah, so, and everything was okay. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the Carbone's then that in 1984... How similar is that to what we have today? Is it the
everything's the same?
That's
we have
awesome.
Not changed a thing.
Oh, I love that so much. And that was all learned from your uncle.
Learned from Abbott. Yeah,
yeah.
And Abbott, I believe, learned from Bocce Club.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Bocce Club in Buffalo. They're a pretty good sized pizzeria.
Oh, it's a I thought it was a literal bocce club.
No, it's a pizzeria, and I believe as a kid he worked there in maybe in the 50s.
Okay.
So there's a lot of, I don't know if he, picked up things there, and that's how he developed his recipes and stuff.
So I love this story about you open on May 8th mm-hmm. and you only sell 8 pizzas.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, what was your mentality like that day? Were you crushed, or were you like, that's okay?
No, I was excited. It was an opening. We didn't advertise or anything. We just opened, we got the store all set up and, mm-hmm. and ready to, it took longer than we thought to open up because the remodeling and getting things ready.
Yeah.
And my brother, we were just talking about the other day, we didn't even have a subunit, a pizza unit that was refrigerated. He made it out of what do you call the board there, plywood, particle board from Formica. And we've had buckets of bins of ice that we kept our toppings on for a little while.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Okay, so you guys get started. You get the 8 pizzas on day one. And do you see slow momentum, or is there a moment?
It actually started picking up pretty quick, I think. Okay. And within 2 years, yeah, we were selling hundreds of pizzas, yeah.
Yeah. What I would say today, you're probably at 8 pizzas a minute, I would assume. It's got to be pretty close.
It's usually 12.
12 pizzas a minute, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's
something like that.
But okay, so it's slow and steady, and that whole time, is your confidence ever shooken? Is shooken a word, by the way? Wait a second.
Did
I got to remember.
Think I was doing the wrong thing?
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of times that I was in tears making, you know, because I'm working myself.
It's hard.
In the beginning, I'm working 15 hours a day.
You dumped a bunch of money into those renovations.
Well, didn't. To tell you the truth, it didn't cost us much to get started. It was $3,000 of my money, $2,000 of my father's money. And, you know, we started out with used equipment, and we had an uncle in Buffalo that owned a restaurant equipment store. So he said, whatever you need, come and get it and pay me back when you can.
That
was a big help, yeah.
What a great story. Yeah. And the fact that you did a lot of that renovation you did yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, we did it all ourselves, yeah, except for a hood system that, of course, we couldn't put in ourselves.
Yeah.
But there was a small one already there, so we used that for a little while. The building that we're in was basically a fifth of the size that we're in now because it was just one little side. And like I say, Pontillo's was there in the beginning, and they moved their location.
Yeah. But I mean, how you must now, I mean, of course there's a whole story. We still got decades to tell, right? But just thinking back to 1984 right now, I mean, you must be so proud of that.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you guys got in there. You're still a kid at that time, really, right?
Yeah, I'm 24 years old.
You're 24. Yeah. You get in there with family and you build that thing. You do it for $5,000. Granted, 1984, that's more now, but it's still, to your point, not a ton of money.
That's not anything compared to what it would be today.
Yeah. Do you ever hear some of these guys at open restaurants, you hear what their build-outs are, and it's fucking ridiculous. It's like they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to build out now.
Well, yeah, I'm actually in the process now. I'm looking to remodel my location, and I'm like, how much for a hood system? You know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yes, yeah. And that's one of my biggest learning curves around here has been just what everything costs.
I know.
Every piece
ridiculous.
Of equipment is out of control. But anyway, so now you're starting to build. And bring me through like the next bunch of years. I mean, what's the big next step? Or is it just one location? By the way, that location, where was that? Is that Dewey Avenue?
That's still the Dewey Avenue is the original store.
So that's the actual, so people can still walk in and see exactly what you're talking about. That was that store.
That was that store, yeah.
Built the same way too, as you walk in and to the right?
Everything on the left is pretty much almost how it was, except for we've moved some ovens and took all the pizza counters out of there.
Uh-huh.
It was only 13 feet wide and 40 feet deep, the first store we had. I can't even imagine how we did it out of there because there's no room for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I had my mixer in there. I had my sinks in there, my ovens in there, the fryers in there. There was no room for anything.
Yeah.
And a counter just straight across the wall, yeah.
And pizza and wings, is that what you're doing? Are you doing subs?
We were doing pizza and wings only in the beginning.
Okay.
And we only opened at, I think, 4 o'clock maybe. And then eventually went to lunches and went from there. They had to get more ovens, more fryers, opened up a wall a few years later. Mm-hmm. Double the space.
Yeah, I like that you've got it. You actually have your history written down too. You came prepared. It doesn't happen that often. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, things were going so good that we started looking. I had my brothers in the store. My younger brother, the next oldest, he was, like I said, making cabinets for Barrett Wood Products. And he wanted to stay in that. And then a few years later, he's like, I got to get out of here. The fumes and stuff of the glues and stuff were not good for him. So he came into the business, and we looked for another location. And my other brother, Tom, was working for us. And we actually found him a location first in 87. We found a location in North Reese on North Reese and Ladder Road.
So 3 years later, you're ready to start number two.
Yeah, we started another location, yeah.
And so this is basically, it's working so well at this point. It's going well.
Yeah.
Your uncle was right. Screw the donuts. Yeah. This is the right business. By the way, does donuts close when pizza opens, or do donuts stay open after that?
My brother Tom took over the donut baking for us in 84, and we were still, you know, just starting the pizzeria there. Mm-hmm. And they just kept it for a few more months. And a friend of mine actually bought the store for my mom, and he continued the business for a while.
Great. Is that business still around?
It's not there anymore.
No, that's okay. No. Pizza. So Uncle was right, man. Yeah. Pizza's what was your uncle's name again, the guy in Buffalo?
Dominic.
So Dominic was right. He's like, get into pizza, right? Yep. He gave good advice.
Yep.
Okay, so 1987, it's time for location number two. You've got your siblings who are looking to get into the business now because it's going well.
Right.
So you said you found that location, mm-hmm. and he's going to run it.
My brother's going
to
run it, yeah.
So here's my question for you now. What kind of, do you just give full autonomy to your brother to say, hey, go run your own pizzeria? Or is it like, hey, I built this thing and here's your rules. Here's
well, he knew what how to make everything. I mean, he was mm-hmm. very hard worker. Yeah. So he knew how to do everything and we just let him free reign it over there.
So it was sort of amicable from day one.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm not going to go wild and crazy do different things.
Yeah, everything was the same. Everything, all the same ingredients and everything. Nothing changes. And he just goes, runs his location.
So, because that does strike me as something. And today you have four, is that right?
Four locations. Four in the family.
Four in the family. Yeah, okay. Yeah. How many are there total?
Well, yeah, it's four in the family. And then my uncle has two locations. But
we're
all separate. Those are separate.
Okay, got it. So there's four in your family, four locations.
Right.
So yeah, I wonder that to this day because you can't be in all four places at once.
No.
And I wonder like how hard it is to control that all four. Because you want the experience to be the same at all four? Or do you want it to be that each one has its own personality? Like what's your thoughts
on
that?
Well, everything should be the same. I mean, all the food quality and everything and mm-hmm. should be the same. And everyone that was running the store was family. So.
Mm-hmm. Over the years, have you ever walked into any one of those four and seen something and you're like, what the hell are you guys doing? Oh, yeah.
No, not really.
Oh, that's good. I mean, you've got good control. Everyone's afraid of you, I think.
If I do see something that I didn't like how somebody was spreading a pizza or something, I'll try and show them how to do something a little differently.
But there wasn't a day you walked in and they're like, we're doing tacos or something. You're like,
No. Everything was always the same.
I just watched that movie, The Founder, the guy. Yeah. It's about the founding of McDonald's. It's mm-hmm. got Michael Keaton in it. And when McDonald's first started franchising their first restaurants, the franchisees, your advantage was you had all family, right?
Right.
So these are people you can kind of hold accountable.
Yeah.
But in the McDonald's story, the franchisees started doing crazy shit. Like they started having like tacos at McDonald's. And so the owners of McDonald's are going, what are you doing? We don't do tacos.
Right.
Like it's all kinds of stuff.
No, we had a lot of family, brothers and sisters. I have the brother-in-law, sister-in-laws, nephews,
Yeah.
A lot of help through the years.
A lot of buy-in. I mean, when it's family too, there's a lot of buy-in. Mm-hmm. The other maybe small advantage is that when you're all family, there's no real HR. If
right.
your brother pisses you off, you can just say, hey, you get on the
phone. There were those days, of course.
Yeah. Okay, so location number two, that's 1987. That's your brother. And how does that go? Is that immediately to the moon? Or
that did take off pretty good. Yeah, he had a good business there. And it's still a good business today. Mm-hmm. Now my sister Dina owns that store. We maybe four years ago, I separated up divided the corporation and gave my sister that store. That's her location. That's her business. My brother has Alden out by Darien Lake. Mm-hmm. So, and then I retain ownership of the Dewey Avenue store and the Hilton Village store.
There was I remember there was this, I think her name was Carrie Lynn. She's from Hilton, I'm pretty sure. And I remember her telling me about Carbone's Pizza back in the day. So earlier when I said that I didn't know of it, mm-hmm. I think I do remember her saying, if you ever come to Hilton, get Carbone. So you know what? Now that you say that, Hilton, I do, yes. And does your son?
My younger son runs that
That's
store.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
I've been Dewey Ave every time. The OG. I'm an OG kind of guy, All right. So location number three then. Bring me through that one. How does that
Location number three would be Alden.
Okay.
Out.
And what year?
That's 1980. Sorry, 1990.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have, a salesman that's our salesman for U.S. or Sorrento Cheese at the time, Sorrento Food Service, says, hey, I got this location. This woman wants to retire out there, selling the business, selling the building and everything. We go look at it. And at the time, my aunt was living in the town there, and she still does today. And we looked at it and said, oh, we'll buy this. We'll take a chance. So I had my cousin was living out there, and he says, oh, yeah, I'll come in. I'll work it for you a little bit. So he worked it for us a little bit. my brother Tony and myself would go out there a few days a week, make all the dough and sauce, and get that business going. And then a brother-in-law, Rich, he said he'd like to try it for a little while, so he was working it for a while for us. And it wasn't for him, so he's a painter by trade, so he went back to painting. And then in 1994, we ended up buying the house next door to it, and my brother Tony moved there full-time and took over the location.
That seems like a dream come true, to live right next to where you work. Yeah. It also seems tough because then I would never leave work, you know?
There's always a problem. You're right next door. They know where to find you.
True. You can't hide.
Can't hide. But it's worked out good for him. He does really well there now. His daughter is working, and her boyfriend works in there, and they do a good job.
Okay. And then finally, I guess location number four is Hilton, right?
Well, actually, Hilton was not the next one. It was actually Pompano Beach, Florida.
Oh, wait a minute. Twists and turns in the story, John.
So my sister was in the military. She was a Navy girl, and I think she was in there for 8 years, and she got out, and she wanted to open up a store, and she was living in Florida at the time, so we opened up a location in Pompano.
Now, this is an interesting twist to me because you've built a reputation now in Rochester at this point. And so you open another one, you have some confidence this is going to work.
Right.
Because now you've built both a great quality restaurant, but you've also built a brand. Mm-hmm. And they are sometimes two different things, you know. I mean, they go hand in hand often, but they can be two different things. So in Pompano Beach, you Carbones, and you haven't built a brand yet. So now you're new again. So that must have been a challenge.
Yeah, it was, especially because she's, you know, long distance, and you know I went down there when we first opened up to help her open the store and you know, maybe train people and get things going. It was hard for her not being here, you know, or not being any family with her over there. But then things changed. My brother Tom wanted to leave the business, and he had the North Greece store. So Dina says, you know, I'll take that store. Mm-hmm. So we closed up the Pompano Beach store, and she came back and has had the North Greece store ever since.
There's also logistics about opening in Florida, too. I mean, could you get all the same ingredients, or did you have to have a couple subs here and there?
Everything is the same, all the ingredients. The only difference that we found in there, it's a tough thing with the dough because water.
I've heard this.
Down there, all the minerals in the water, it's a little bit different.
I've always heard this. Yeah, can you tell us, can you teach us a little bit about that? I've always heard water quality is a big deal when you're making pizza.
I think New York has the best water around, so our area is pretty good. But Florida, with all the heavy minerals and things in there, it's hard to let the dough rise. And
so that is
true.
The
taste is a little different, yeah.
Yeah.
I know I hear stories, there's a lot of places that actually will truck in water from New York State and make their stuff.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, is it like when it comes to water quality, is it that you just don't want anything in that water? Like you're saying, it's full of minerals in Florida. Is distilled water, is that a stupid thing for me to say?
Yeah, I think distilled would be a different. That doesn't have anything in it. Yeah.
Okay. So that wouldn't, but we wouldn't like distilled.
No, we wouldn't like that probably.
Yeah. Okay. We had a guy. Well, I shouldn't tell that story. Never mind. That's bad. Okay. So Pompano Beach closes. She comes back. She takes over North Greece.
Correct.
And so then is this when we get the Hilton or?
Well, yeah. She comes back to about 2000, I'd say, back into North Greece. And then she even doubles the size of the store around 2002. So she remodeled that store, made it double the size. She got a, you know, pretty good following. Mm-hmm. It's comparable business to Dewey Avenue store. Mm-hmm.
Is there any, between you and I, is there any like inner family competition on which store beats which store? You know, well, no?
No, not between the family.
No.
Okay. Maybe between customers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But All right.
You hear it both ways.
I see. Yep. Okay, so she's doing that, and then Hilton is what, 2000?
Hilton Village is 2007.
Seven. Okay, yeah. Great. All right.
There was an existing pizzeria there also. It was a Cronies.
Okay.
And we bought that location. Actually, it was a bid. It was an auction going on for the equipment in the store. And funny thing is, you know, at the auction, I know that I have the location secured because the owner of the plaza, I worked with him. One of my first jobs at McCurdy's cleaning crew, he owned the building. Mm. So he says, oh, John, yeah, oh, they get... Nobody else gets it. They get, no matter what happens, they get the location.
Nice. So, that's great. Yeah. And does Hilton, I mean, when you get to Hilton now, you're talking about, you know, Greece, a big town, right? Mm-hmm. Hilton's a little bit of a smaller town, right? They might, I'm wondering, you go into a town like Hilton on day one of Carbones, they've probably got loyalty. Everyone there has got a favorite pizza place in town. How do you come into a community like that and convince them to give you a try?
Or well, I think name recognition, I think.
Okay,
And the North Greece store is really not too far from Hilton.
Okay.
It's within 5 miles.
So they knew you. So it wasn't
so
like
a
new pizzeria.
Knew us. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was like, we're finally getting a Carbones in Hilton.
Right, yeah.
I see.
And we remodeled that location also before we opened it.
Okay.
Totally took it apart and redid that one.
Okay. Great.
It's a nice little store, yeah. And there is a lot of pizzerias in Hilton.
Yeah, are there? I imagine. Yeah. That's the one. I mean, that's what I'd love to talk to you about too. I have this business, right? This co-packing, mm-hmm. contract manufacturing sauce business, and there's, for a lot of reasons, there's not a lot of us. There's not a ton of competition in this world, and a lot of the reasons is the barrier to entry, like we talked about before. It's very expensive to start doing a business like
this. Today, yeah.
It totally, and it's also very specialized. You're not really selling anything to the public. You're selling only to businesses. You know, you don't have an infinite number of customers in this world. You have a very finite number of mm-hmm. customers. So it's a way different experience than opening a pizzeria where there is a lot of competition.
A lot of competition.
A million pizzerias. I mean, how have you in your years dealt with the inevitable, which is that somebody moves in down the street, somebody says their pizza's better than yours, somebody shit talks your pizza. Yeah. You know, like, how have you dealt with what has to have happened over the years of just so much competition?
I don't worry about it.
Oh, that's the secret. Oh, that is so the secret. That's the secret. Yeah.
Because I feel that we have a superior product, you know, mm-hmm. and we've been there for a long time. And if somebody comes in and moves down the street, I mean, good luck to them, because there's so much competition. I know that Dewey at one time, I believe there was 11 pizzerias within a mile of the store.
Yeah.
And my business has not changed over the years. It's very consistent. I mean, I can go from week to week and sell 3 pizzas difference in that week. So
yeah,
we're pretty consistent.
That's awesome. Yeah. That consistency, yeah. Like that just lets you, I don't think people realize how efficient you can get with your business when you know your numbers down to that point. That is a beautiful thing. Yeah.
I mean, there's days where I sell exactly the same amount of pizzas the week before.
And the other thing you're saying that, so first of all, you said you don't worry about competitors. Right. The other thing that you're saying to me that is so enlightening is that it sounds to me like if you have a competitor, it's actually yourself.
Right.
You're looking at your own numbers mm-hmm. and saying, am I going to beat that? How am I doing versus last year, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And like I say, I don't worry. I just got to do what I'm doing because it's been a success all these years.
Yeah.
And let them worry about being a success. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm already there.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Where was things like pizza delivery at in the 80s? Was that a thing yet at that time? Or?
Yeah, I think it was starting to go on. I think the big chains was starting to. And that's the other thing. We do not deliver.
Yeah. And you never have?
Never have. No.
Never even. Did you get close at any point? Or?
No, never. I mean,
was that
with
just
the numbers we were doing? And my uncle would say to me, "You're selling that pizza." He says, "Do not deliver."
Yeah.
So he says, "You don't have to," and that's what we feel. Yeah. I mean, if there's a big enough order, I of course will deliver to you. You
know, that's special, they're ordering 20 sheet pizzas.
A church orders 20 sheets. I mean, I've done 100 larges for people. It's like I'll deliver that.
So. Not doing delivery is such a good strategy. I think that the lessons that are coming out of hearing from you is, first of all, your secret ingredient for sure is your family,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you guys are just tight-knit. Everybody is on the same page, and you're all driving. Because even when I was talking about, like, butting heads, you know, you kind of giggled, like, yeah, once in a while.
Yeah.
But you guys are aligned.
Everybody's a hard worker.
Yeah. So you have that. That's a secret ingredient. But also just listening to how it sounds like you have such a good handle on your consistency. You are really an efficient business. And your menu's not this big, giant, long business menu either.
No, I always thought, and my father always thought the same thing, too much stuff is no good. Yeah. So you just try and keep it simple. I mean, I sell stuff that's not even on my menu, toppings that I don't even list, you know, ham or pineapple.
Oh, is there a secret menu? Is that what people don't
know? Well, no, just a basic menu of toppings. And, you know, we just don't really change anything.
Well, so if I call and I say, can I get ham on my pizza?
You can get ham on your penis.
But it might not be on the menu is what you're saying?
It is not on the menu.
That's funny.
Ham and pineapple are not on the menu. Broccoli, I don't think is a topping, but we have it.
Yeah. Can I tell you a secret that I might edit out of this later, but you just witnessed something happen. Our plant manager just walked in and handed me this. What does that look like to you? This two little pieces of...
Looks like a piece of glass, a mushroom or something.
It's plastic. It's plastic. And yeah, you're right, because of the burn on the side, it looks like that. What this is, I don't know if I should even tell this story. Did you notice when I walked here around the tour, we weren't making any sauce in the moment?
Yeah.
This fell off of something.
Oh,
and so you immediately have to halt everything you're doing.
And throw it away.
And you don't, anything that you don't know for a fact that doesn't have a foreign material in it is in the garbage.
Yeah.
And then you don't make a single ounce of sauce again until you have accounted for.
Oh, yeah. That stuff happens to us, too. Yeah. If something happens when somebody's making dough or something... Geez, I think I dropped something in the dough. I throw the whole mix away.
Yeah, you throw it away. Yeah. We threw some away today, and then we also stopped everything we were doing until this was found. And so the fact that you and I are sitting in here and he walked into the room, I knew something big was happening. Oh, okay. And he put this down in front of me, and that is incredible that we found it. That's, oh, man. Okay, all right, back to making sauce, I guess. That's good.
Good.
Yeah. All right, anyway. So I think I just want to point out how efficient it sounds like you run your business, because I think that that's a really big, good secret. You also mentioned too big of a menu is a disaster. I've interviewed many chefs over the years, and I have asked this question. How do you know when you go to a new restaurant, how do you know if it's any good? And people have said that many times. They have said, usually if it's a short, concise menu, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I've walked into places before and I've looked up at boards and I'm like, I can't even read all this stuff. There's so much stuff, and it's very confusing sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it sounds like you are just really good at running a business. So let me go back to the beginning of the interview, which is your father's an insurance salesman, your mother stay at home, and all of a sudden you just buy this donut business. Mm-hmm. Your family, you did not have entrepreneurship in the family, and then you just did it, and you did it excellently. What is the secret to that?
I think just hard work. I think
our
generation, we weren't afraid to work. I mean, I was never afraid to work. Today, I don't know about the people today. You know, I mean,
that's right.
I do have a lot of good employees. So yeah. I got to say,
I think I screwed up as a leader. 2 days ago, I had a meeting with a couple of younger employees and I started a sentence by saying, you know, your generation.
Yeah.
And just starting that way, I was like, oh boy, I can't. Yeah. First of all, I sound old. Second of all, those are fighting words to start off with.
Yeah, I mean, you work nights, you work weekends, you work holidays. So if you're able to do all that stuff and willing to do it, I think you can be a success. Yeah.
Can I give you my opinion? You don't have to agree with this, by the way. You can say I don't agree. That's fine. I'm not speaking on behalf of John. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. But what I think is that your generation, to your point, very hard workers.
Yes.
It was just get the work done. And by the way, you were allowed to get yelled at when you were a kid, right? Like, I'm old enough that it was okay for me. My bosses yelled at me. Yep. They raised their voice. They screamed at me. They told me, get my ass back to work.
Yep.
That doesn't really exist anymore. You do that now and you get a bad, that immediately becomes bad.
Oh yeah. You get an employee that'll cry on you.
They'll cry on you.
Yeah.
But also, we were taught that, and we're not necessarily the same generation, but I'm a little bit older that I don't know if I deserve to be lumped in with the youngs these days. We were told you work hard, you shut up, you work hard.
Right.
And if you stop working hard, get your ass back to work, right? These kids are told. Oh, go ahead.
Don't complain.
Don't complain, right.
Yeah, because it makes things worse for yourself if you start complaining about how hard it is that you have to work. And
Yes. Yeah. And the most important thing is that you go to work, you bust your ass, you do a good job.
Right.
And I think that maybe these kids now are more being told, you know what, you just be true to yourself. You do what you feel is right. And if somebody's mean to you, then that's because they're mean, not because you've done anything wrong.
Can't be mean to anybody today.
Can't be mean to anybody. No. Anyway, okay.
And I think mommy and daddy these days.
Yes.
Very, too easy on their children.
It's been a while since I've used this example, but a good friend of mine from high school is a football coach in our hometown. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, that we all generations like to beat up on the younger generation. I mean, when I was a kid, we were getting beat up too. And you, I don't know. Do you remember, were your grandparents, did they look at you, think you were lazy when you were 20 or no?
No.
No. Okay.
I don't think so.
All right. No. All right. Well, anyway, I asked him, I go, is it true that these kids just aren't as tough as we were? And he said, he goes, it's not true. He said, they are every bit as big, strong, and fast as we were. The difference is that our parents dropped us off at practice and picked us up at the end. And if the coach had yelled at us, they said, good, you deserved it. He says, now the parents drop them off at practice. They sit in the parking lot and watch practice. And if they see me yell at their kid, they storm the field and want to know why.
Yeah.
So maybe some of it's on us, the parents, you know. Maybe we've done, it wrong. Okay, so is it true Carbone's Brighton, New York opens in 2026? Go ahead, John. Tell them. No. What?
Not likely.
I just made that up? Okay, all right. I made that up, folks. I'm just hopeful. I was hopeful.
I guess that would be entirely up to my two boys because...
yeah, let's talk about nowadays.
Yeah, nowadays, I only work if I have to.
Yeah, beautiful life.
You know, holidays, if it's real busy, like, you know, Super Bowl, Halloween, I definitely go in and help if I have to.
Are those top two, by the way?
Those are the top 2 days. Yeah.
What's number three?
Number three?
Night before Thanksgiving.
It could be New Year's Eve, depending on what kind of, what day it falls on.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
If it's an all-day thing or if it's just a, you know, like the day before Christmas is, we're only open at 6 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
We're only open, you know, a day before Easter or things like that. Those are busier days.
Yeah, yeah. What about my theory? Night before Thanksgiving, is that a big one?
Night before Thanksgiving is a big day, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one, yeah. Okay, so these days, you're only around if you're really needed.
Yeah.
On the big holidays, your kids are mostly running it. You want to give them a shout out? What are their names?
Jonathan is my oldest son, and Kirk is my younger son.
And do the two of them run all four, or what are they?
No, just the two stores. No, okay. My sister Dina, she has her store, and my brother Tony has his store.
Okay, so they're still doing those the same way. So your sons come in, and are you under the impression that they always wanted to do this, or was there a period of time when they were kids you weren't sure?
I'm not even sure if they want to do it right now. Actually, my younger son Kirk, he's a really good hands-on person. He's very regimented, so organized it drives me nuts sometimes. But he's got everything all laid out. He's very neat and clean, and he's a good kid.
Again, I think he probably learned that from you, even though you say it drives you nuts, because it sounds like you also are very regimented. And
well, I don't know how organized I am.
Well, you know. These kids got computers now, so they
They have computers.
Easier than back in the day.
Yeah, he's more of the office type person, and my older son, John, he's more of the worker person, like myself.
Got it.
No, I'm not a 9-to-5 shirt and tie guy. I'm always a t-shirt guy. My dad was always took care of the books and all that stuff, and I was always the worker.
How does it go when you're in a business where you're so entangled with your family, all those years, still to this day with your kids? How does it go on Easter and Thanksgiving and Christmas? Are you guys able to set the business aside and just be Carbone's? Or, like, is it always going to come up?
The business, it's always there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lately, I keep telling, don't talk about the business on holidays. You know, let's have a day off. But something always comes up, you know.
Yeah. What do you think? You know, I joke about the future, and you said it's up to your kids, but, like, what do you think? I mean, would there ever be another location? Is there anything you could see in the future, or is it just business as usual for a while?
For right now, it's probably just business as usual.
Okay.
You know, there have been people over the years that want to franchise or want to open a location. I've had, you know, friends ask me, and my father was never up for that. He didn't want anyone else to have any control, you know, to maybe take away from the name somehow.
Mm-hmm. So you would, if somebody did come to you with enough money who you liked and trusted and said, I want to open one in Victor, that's, you got to be a part of my family, or would you entertain it if it was the right person?
No, I would probably entertain it, I would think, yeah.
Okay.
Right. I mean, my kids, I think, would entertain it more than anything, because that's what they would want to do maybe in the future.
Yeah.
they say, why do we got to work as hard? Why don't we let other people work for us? You know?
Yeah, I get it. What are your thoughts on pizza trends over the years? You know, I mean, especially in the last decade or two, we've seen, you know, well, I mean, there's the Chicago deep dish and then, of course, Neapolitan pizzas. Over the last bunch of years, you had the Detroit style pizza. Now, I think it's new. Have you heard about New Haven pizza? Is that the thing right now?
I don't even know what that is.
I don't quite know what it is either. Yeah. I've just heard that it's a kind, like it's a new sort of pizza trend that's going on. New Haven. I'm going to Google it actually because I want to hear it. I want to get your thoughts on it because I don't know what it is either. Let's see here. New Haven pizza.
Our thought is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that's. Oh, here comes Sarah.
Sarah? Is that one? Is that your girl?
That's a Sarah.
Oh,
the
bring
social,
her on in here. Hold on a second. Come on in, Sarah. I'm looking up New Haven style. Come on, have a seat, Sarah. How's it going? Okay, ready? Here we go, John. New Haven style pizza, or a pizza, A-P-I-Z-Z-A, is a thin crust coal-fired pizza from New Haven, Connecticut, known for its chewy, crispy, and often charred crust. A regular shape and minimal toppings like tomato sauce, pecorino cheese, garlic, and oregano. So this apparently is like the new trend or something.
Right.
I don't know. But over the years, as trends have come in, you never buy into the hype. You're like, we do what we do. Yeah.
Keep
Sarah,
it simple.
Come on, you can sit. Oh, you're taking pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
I wanted to interview you for a second. I don't know. You don't talk on the microphone? No? Here.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. All right, fine. You don't have to if you don't want to. We can take pictures. I got one of those Carbones hats, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got one. Yeah. Did you see if they left any pizza for me downstairs? I've only had two slices. I require at least four.
I brought pizza, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And wings with the sweet sauce, too.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's
right, yeah. Anyway, so this is, I mean, the business to this, did you ever imagine in 1984 you'd have a social media person? Never even heard of social media in 1984.
No. Everything's different today.
How incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you got to have that today. I mean, there's so much stuff going on the internet and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So over those years, though, back to the pizza trends thing that I was trying to bring up. Over the years, obviously, you've heard of Chicago style and probably Detroit style. Have you ever heard of that? It goes in like a pan or something.
Yeah, pan pizza. Okay.
Then you get the super thin crust. And there's probably other ones I'm missing. Has anyone ever tried to get in your ear and be like, hey, we should do a deep dish version?
No, not really. No. I mean, customers sometimes would like a thinner pizza, maybe. So all we do is just cut a little bit of the dough off and make it a little thinner. That's all. But we don't want to do any deep dish or thin pizza or anything like that. Our pizza's our pizza.
I mean, dude, you know, the secret to your success has come out in this last hour so clearly. Is you are just precisely focused on what you do.
Yeah.
And that is such a good business lesson.
You want to do what you do and do it the best you can. That's all we want to do.
The truth is, the reason I keep bringing it up is because it has always been an issue for me. Mm-hmm. I have a business partner, and thank God I do, because I have always had an issue with getting a little veered off to this direction, a little veered off into that direction. I mean, I'm doing a freaking podcast in the middle of a workday, right? Like, I'm a little veered off even in the moment. But he has taught me, and so have some of my other mentors, about core competency. Get really great at something and just do that. And just keep doing that. And it sounds like maybe the secret to your success, aside from your family, is you got really great at doing this one thing and you said, don't monkey with it.
Right.
Stay great at that.
And don't change it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We slice our own cheese.
That's cool.
We slice our own pepperoni. And we've changed nothing.
How have you dealt with the fact that over the years, and in I guess 40 plus years at this point, how have you dealt with the fact that at some point, inevitably, some supplier didn't have the thing you needed? That has to have happened at some point.
I mean, things have changed here and there, but all of our core products are all the same. They're still the same for the last 42 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have had a supplier that stopped carrying this brand of olive or... But you go to a different supplier.
You just try some olives and get the closest thing you can find.
Now, my brother Tony, who has the Alden store, he's our kind of like our quality guy.
Yeah.
He'll A-B everything. And he's crazy sometimes about I mean, he gets really, really hyped up about these things. I mean, even just chicken tenders or chicken fingers, he'll... So we have to use this one. We have to use that one.
Yeah.
He talks about cold cuts and the meats we use. Can't use that. Everyone else uses, you know, junk stuff, and we use the best stuff. So
yeah, that's it. Would you say too, and obviously I don't want to get into anything proprietary, but the ingredients you're buying, I'd imagine in probably a lot of cases there is a cheaper version of that, but you're buying
we never look for price. We look for what we want to use, what we think's the best.
That's the other big secret too, because frankly I think you and I both know there's plenty of pizzerias out there cheapest
stuff they can get.
Yeah, and then they charge a lot, and then they say it's because of the quality. But some of us in the food industry know that actually they're buying all the cheaper.
Right.
Anyway, okay. Anyway, all right. Well, Sarah, what else? Do you need us to pose for anything? We're just about done, to tell you the truth. What do we do? I kept you here for an hour. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's
Is that
fine.
Okay?
Got no place else I'd rather be right now.
Oh, that's so nice. That's wonderful. You ever, when you just drop in to like Dewey Ave, when nobody knew you were coming, you drop in. Do you ever do that?
Things get quieter. Oh, yeah.
I noticed that, too, by the way. Yeah. Nothing more educational than when they didn't think I was going to be here and I happened to pop in. Yeah. And I always learn a thing or two about about that.
And, sometimes you have to pop in, too, to keep things a little...
You ever secret shop your own place? You ever order pizza with nobody knowing you ordered the pizza just to see, like, hey, what's this experience like?
Sometimes, over the years. Yeah, I'll call up an order and... just put it under somebody else's name or something. Yeah, I've done that before.
Just to feel the experience the way anyone else would. Were they nice to me on the phone? Did they get my order right? Was it hot right when I got there? You know?
And if it's not made to my liking, they know it.
yeah. Well, John, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. Is there anything in your notes we didn't get to? Anything you wanted to bring up?
Well, it was just funny. I have a grand opening special. Our very first one, so you can get an idea of what a pizza costs.
Oh, wow.
In 1984.
Wow.
$4.39 for a large cheese and pepperoni pizza.
$4.39 for a large pizza. Grand opening special. Carbone's Pizzeria, Dewey, 2841 Dewey Avenue.
$7 for 50 wings.
$7 for 50 wings. And that logo is the same logo.
Logo's the same, yep.
That's awesome.
Actually, we've changed it all over your years. Now it's now it'll be this logo here.
Let me see. Yeah. Okay, it's pretty similar though.
Yeah. And even our second anniversary pizza was we even went lower with 425.
Look at that. 425 second year.
It's an anniversary opening, yeah.
$7 still for the bucket of 50 wings.
Yep.
The sheet pizza. There's no price on the sheet. To buffalo style, hot, medium, or mild. We only use large, fresh wings. Always. Yeah, it's always been. Yeah. Look at that picture. Is that young you?
That's a younger me. Yeah.
Wow.
That's the Alden store.
Look how handsome you were. you're still handsome.
I actually had hair then.
Look how handsome he was. Look at that young, young Italian guy right there. Is that Dewey Ave, you said?
That's Alden.
Okay, yep. Sorry. That's how I haven't been.
So that would have been 1990, yeah.
Yeah, 1990. What's that?
These are just other menus. And
these are from over the years? This one looks a little newer. Yeah. Sorry, I know a lot of this is visual, but this is fascinating.
This was a 1989. We did a
pizza party.
Pizza party. It was actually a pizza competition with all those pizzerias listed there.
Yeah.
And we won best pizza.
I would keep this too, for sure, because there's some other names on there people would recognize. How the hell did Little Caesars get into this, by the way? They don't belong. No chains. We don't do chains.
But what's the new thing out there? Was it Best of Rochester, their Community Choice Awards?
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. You guys, do you win that every year? I wouldn't be surprised.
We're the best pizzeria the last 4 years in a row.
Nice. Well, John, congratulations on everything. I mean, do you ever take a minute to pinch yourself a little and look and go, I can't believe it. You altered the course.
It's been good for me. Yeah.
But also, you altered the course. I mean, think about how many families that their pizza, because your pizza, everyone, you know, when you grew up, you guys probably even in Buffalo, when you were a child, you ordered pizza probably from somewhere, right?
Like, well, when we moved here, we go to Tom and Nancy's. Because Tom and Nancy's was kind of close to a Buffalo pizza.
Yeah. So. My parents, wait till I tell you what my parents did to me. Yeah. Every Friday night, I don't even know if I want to tell you. I can't look you in the eyes when I say, I'll look at Sarah when I say this. I grew up in a small town, don't forget, in Ohio. Every Friday night, we ordered Domino's.
Oh, yeah, that's not pizza.
Got a little older, and when I was finally in my 20s and I was in college and I started going to real pizzerias, I came home one time and I went, what were you doing? Why did you do that to me? Yeah.
And there's a lot of good pizzas out there in Buffalo, I'll say.
It's true. But you know, but you have it's such an overused saying, it's a little corny, but it's true, but you've become a fabric of people's lives, mm-hmm. right? There's people who have never met you, probably, who have Carbone's Pizza is their regular go-to pizza. Mm-hmm. You altered their lives by what you started. I mean, do you ever just pinch yourself and go like, wow, we're part of the story of pizza?
Yes, I'm very thankful. Yeah. And we, you know, we still have customers today that were there in 1984. They still come to the store.
That's cool. Yeah. Do you have any, before we go, do you have any advice for entrepreneurs?
Well, work hard and don't give up.
Yeah, don't give up is a good one too. That's a good piece of advice. Laser focus on the efficiency of your business. I think it's just great. John, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Very nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
You as well. Thanks for the sweet sauce too.
You're welcome.
Eat some more of that.